Big thanks to Kapersky Labs for supporting Current Geek. Kapersky Labs' award-winning internet security software gives 400 million users the power to protect their banking, browsing, shopping, and socializing from dangerous online threats. Go to Kapersky.com and get Kapersky Total Security. Use Current Geek at checkout for 50% off. That's 50% off with the code CURRENTGEEK at Kapersky.com. And by HostPapa.com. Powerful web hosting solutions and cloud-based productivity tools are perfect for small business owners like you. Go to HostPapa.com/CURRENTGEEK today and get your exclusive promo code CURRENTGEEK at checkout. That'll save you 15% off their popular shared web hosting packages. That's HostPapa.com/CURRENTGEEK.
I have it.
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world and you, to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson with Tom Merritt. Hi.
We're keeping you thinged on all currents that matter.
Yeah.
I'm Tom.
That's
yes,
right.
Yes. That was the worst gaveling in that I've ever done.
It's all right. It's the worst introduction I've ever done. We may as well be trying to do a radio play from 1950 where we don't know anything about science.
Focus your locator beam, Scott.
This isn't going to mean anything.
The ship.
To anyone, but we heard a really fantastic X-1 episode before things started today, and I can't quite
get enough
of it. It
was great because it was typical radio voice from everyone else, right? Mm-hmm. Captain, I will go check the Mars people. And then the captain was like, okay, you go do that.
Whatever you need.
Check your locator beam.
I'm never going to get sick of you saying it, but you might at home. We're going to plow forward. Hey, guess what? We have a guest, and this person is no stranger to what we do here. It's Jenny Josephson, everyone. Hi, Jenny.
Oh, hey, hi.
Now, you were going to be 1/4 of our contingent today, but I think something may have come up for one of our other guests. So you're solo guesting it. You're just keeping that chair warm on your own.
I can do it. I'm sad, but I believe.
Okay. You're doing this from NPR offices. Should that help our production value, do you think?
No, yes. She's not, Scott.
Sorry.
It's a different network.
PRI.
No.
PRX.
American Public Media.
APM. What? How many APMs?
APM.
How many APMs do you get? How many? What's
in a hot dog or?
for a buck. How many
APMs for a buck?
Yeah, you know, it depends on the day, the value of the dollar.
All right. We'll just say marketplace. She'll do a little check on the stock market toward the end of the podcast and, give us the weather and traffic on the nines.
There was a Skype artifact that happened just now in the video that freaked me out because someone started walking behind Jenny and it froze for a second and then that person disappeared. They disappeared, Jenny. Someone was just transported out of the world behind you.
Oh my gosh.
No idea where they went.
Wow.
It's the portal that goes to, the other world.
I am going.
Asgard. It's fun.
I'm going to check that after the show. I'm looking at that in post. That's freaky.
Yeah.
Nice catch, Tom. All right. Well, Jenny, you know the drill. We're going to dive right in, do some news. Here we go.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, what's on the docket today?
Well, I'm glad you asked. ABC Entertainment President Channing Dungey was asked at the Television Critics Association press tour in Beverly Hills Thursday whether she wants a primetime series based on Star Wars. I'm paraphrasing a little here, but Channing said, duh, of course I do. Apparently Channing Dungey, big fan of Star Wars, and would love to say yes. What she did say in reality is that they are having conversations with Lucasfilm and they will continue to have conversations. But of course, saying that in public in front of a bunch of television critics made the internet lose its face.
How fortuitous it is then that on the show today we have one Tom Merritt and one Jenny Josephson, co-hosts on a podcast all about Star Wars, to comment on these goings on. I feel like they've been rumoring something about a Star Wars TV show from as far back as like 2005, and they were talking about Kevin Smith for a while, and then they were talking about some other showrunner writing group, and then that went away, and George Lucas was talking about it, and then he wasn't talking about it, and now Disney owns it all, and now they can really talk about it, and it seems like maybe something might finally happen. So, Jenny, are you up on the idea, or are you worried about the watering down of this great IP?
Okay, so number one, it made little parts of my brain explode here, 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 and here.
Mm-hmm.
Just the thought of it. And then I thought about it more, and I thought about how much I loved the concept of Once Upon a Time until I had to watch it for like a couple seasons. And then also when I watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and loved it more than anything and then had to watch that for a couple of seasons. And the ABC television, when it comes to these sort of fantasy properties, has a way of watering them down. And I don't want to say dumbing them down, because some of it's still really smart and well-written and they've got real geek cred behind the writers. But like, you can just feel the network notes all over it, and it drives me insane, because like, they're like, well, what happens if we for no reason whatsoever made this person upset at things? Right? Like, they would never be upset at. They are real bad over there with these fictional properties about taking characters and smashing them against the wall to see what happens. And I don't 100% think I want that to happen to Star Wars just yet. Like, I think that the delicate balance of our excitement about Star Wars and our fears about Star Wars is just back over the tipping line of feeling okay. And I feel like we need just a little bit more time before we can accept the watering down and the goofiness that goes along. Like, look at what a good job Disney XD is doing with all of the properties. Like, why go there just yet unless you know you're going to do a Battlestar Galactica-esque job?
Good point. So more, you want it darker and edgier is what it sounds like to me. Tom, do you think that's even the way to go? And maybe that isn't exactly what you mean, but I know what you mean by it being too clean.
I don't know that darker and edgier will be the thing that you'll need to do by the time they get to that point Jenny's talking about, because we're evolving and we're kind of getting tired of the dark and edgy and we're looking for new ways. But I definitely agree that you want to keep the focus on the mainline episodes. You want to keep the focus on the stories, and you don't want anything that will pull attention too far. I think that's one of the problems that they're having with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the most wanted that they ended up not going ahead with was worrying about how to integrate them. And so you want to make it so that it's a value add that people want, not another thing people go, well, I guess I'll pay attention to that. That's pushing it too far.
To share, let's just quickly throw around some theories. If they get as far as green lighting this and going for it, and I have a feeling that that's just going to happen eventually. It may not be this, you know, may not be in a season or two, but at some point we're getting episodic Star Wars content outside of films that isn't animated. So let's say that they do it. Are we wanting something that is connected to the mainline storylines or offshoots from things like Rogue One? Or are we looking for something wholly new, characters we've never seen before? All we know is the Force exists. They're still roguish type characters, lots of aliens and bad guys to deal with. But we still, you know, they sort of stay in the era.
Jenny has an idea.
Do you think, Tom, that just from my impish grin, you can guess what two words I'm going to say based on your long history of podcasting with me?
Snap Wexley.
Well,
sorry, that would be me. That would be if I were.
That would be you.
Yeah.
What would my two words be?
Oh, shoot. I know I should know this. And I'm like, because you put me
lady.
On the spot.
Hold on, blanking. Two words.
I talk about her all the time.
Sarlacc pit.
Mara Jade.
Of course. Absolutely, of course. And we've opened the Thrawn door recently.
We've Thrawn opened the door.
Right? So, okay, but here's a question. We're going to find out what the new Thrawn is like in Star Wars Rebels this year. Right. And we are also probably going to find out a little more about Rey's lineage and whether Luke is a father or not. In episode 8, do you want Mara Jade to be the Mara Jade from the Timothy Zahn novels that are no longer canon, though?
Yeah, what do you think, Jenny?
Sorry. I am okay with them not going with the exact same storyline. Was that the question you were asking? I was typing in the chat room and I can't do both at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh, like, no, I just wanted to know, I was asking, do you want Mara Jade to be the Mara Jade from the Timothy Zahn novels?
Yes.
You do.
Pretty close.
Okay.
But now, I'm open to the idea of her evolving as a character, because like she was pretty angry and I'm okay with that to start. But like, I would actually like to see that evolution. And also there's extended universe books got like a little lame later on. So like, I'm okay with them not being fully devoted to that line. I just want that character back and in the world.
But would you rather have her? So I've heard this a lot. Like, if you're going to do the series, this is who you focus on. And I don't have a problem with that. I thought she was great in the Zahn books. And I also like that Thrawn's coming back in his way. And maybe even in a live action thing, we'd see him come back in a flesh and blood way. But do you want that in film or do you want that on TV?
I can't have both. I like cake and pie.
No, you can't. Because here's why. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. have yet to have a guest star from Iron Man.
You're not my dad.
They never have crossover with, you know, the mainline Marvel characters. None of the actual Avengers ever come on that. They don't even have Anthony
Mackie. That's a budget thing, though.
Yeah. True.
More than anything.
That's exactly my point.
Can you afford Chris Evans?
That's exactly my point, though. If they make a movie about Mara Jade and it's that is intended to be a big deal and make millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, they're not going to turn right around and say, all right, this is going to lead right into a series, MASH style. It's not going to happen. It's got to be something separate.
And just to nerd out one more thing, but if you made the deal now, you could do it with an unknown actor, right? You couldn't do it because the movies, the Marvel movies, had already established RDJ and Chris Evans and Mark Ruffalo as big money actors. They're A-list actors. They make A-list money. And no, you can't add television to their deal and not have to pay a butt ton of money. Mm. Like, think of how much money it costs them to add Nick Fury for one tiny scene at the end of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But if you take an unknown, a wiry young redheaded actress of some variety, and you made a deal where they were both in the movies and had a TV deal, you could make that deal for pretty cheap now.
Yeah.
And I think that the dark, like the stuff that the Dark Tower has done and certain other series have tried to put together is this package deal where they all cross over. And if you start with actors young, you could probably get it. Yes, Lady Sif. Thank you.
Jessica, Gatorade. Or no, what's her name? Chastain. What's her name?
Lady Chastain. Yeah. Obi-Wan's little...
No, the actress from Zero Dark Thirty. She should be...
Jessica Chastain, yeah.
Is it Jessica? Jade. For some reason, Jessica doesn't sound
she's
right.
She's a little too A-list, I think, now, yeah, but yeah.
Yeah. Give it Zero Dark Thirty, you'd have had your casting.
Yep.
Well, all right. We'll see how it goes, Tom. I'm very excited.
There are rumors in the chat room that our other guest is available now, so I don't know if you're able to pursue that.
I don't know.
Scott.
Let me check.
But you might try again.
Let's see.
Do you want to read the thing and I'll do the thing and we'll give Scott a minute to try?
Yeah, read the thing.
I was going to do that without explaining it, but yes.
I'm an explainer.
Exactly. The first 13 years of an iconic piece of journalism, a piece of journalistic history, has been preserved by the library of the internet known as archive.org. One of the pieces of journalism that has brought us a foundation and understanding in the world. Nintendo Power is now available on archive.org. The collection dates back to July 1988, goes through June 2001, covers a range of Nintendo products from Mario 2 through the Game Boy Advance. Issues are available as PDFs, EPUBs, Kindle files, and text files, all totally free. And you can just go and relive your gaming history. If you did any Nintendo gaming from 1988 to 2001, you are going to find something to trip your nostalgia trigger. I know you did Nintendo gaming, Jenny.
Yes. In fact, I had to work really hard at it because my household did not have any Nintendo products. So I had a best friend named Anne Geiger, who is one of my favorite people. She and I used to walk around our elementary school holding books out and reading them. Yeah. And knocking into walls. That's how much we loved fictional, crazy stuff. And so I would go over to her house and we would play original Mario and any other games that we possibly could. And she also had, this is a side note to the geeky part, a pantry that was filled with food that I had never seen before, like Entenmann's donuts. And so we would just sit there and play Nintendo and eat Entenmann's donuts and just have a blast. And it's probably one of the happiest memories of my childhood. So if I can now go back and read about it and also play maybe one of those console things would be amazing. Like, I would love that. Like, all I want is to be in the pod of my childhood 24/7.
The first thing I did is I went and I tried to find the issue that I borrowed from Kyle Beatty, Two Doors Down, that detailed the way that you could cheat. It wasn't a cheat exactly, but the way that you could get through the Mario 64 level, like super fast. You could kick all the turtles And there was like some pattern. Do you remember this? You're nodding your head. You remember this?
No, you could speed run it, right? You're talking about speed running through Mario.
Yeah, speed run, exactly.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And I remember that, but it was like, that was me obviously pre-internet when the only turtles I knew were in Logo. And like the idea that there was extra information available to me in the late 80s and early 90s that I could find somewhere had no like language in my vocabulary. Either a friend told you at school, or you read Nintendo Power, or you didn't. Like, what else was the other option? Like, I did not have access to the internet in this time. So like the idea of going back and like recollecting all this knowledge is fantastic to me.
I
had a time turner.
So I went and spent a quick update. I can't get it to work. I don't know why I'm not able to get her in, but we'll figure it out. So I the other day had found out about this, and it was before DTNS, which I was on that Wednesday, and we were going to talk about this very subject. I thought I would just go quickly leaf around a little and, you know, be reminded of my childhood some and whatnot. And I was a teenager when that thing came out. And I went and started and then began to see how easy they made it. Like, literally, you're clicking this side of the screen and a page turns, like animates and turns. And then the next page animates and turns. And it's like the magazine's right freaking in front of me. And I'm also capturing funny clips of terrible ads and really dumb ideas and things that were happening back then with video games, and sharing them on Twitter. And before you knew it, I was down one of the biggest retro rabbit holes of my life. And I don't know who to thank. I guess archive.org, but I don't know who to thank there. Whose idea was this?
Thank Brewster Kahle, the man who created archive.org and has spearheaded this project to become the internet's library, who goes out and not only tries to get donations and support for his nonprofit foundation, but then meets with these companies and says, look, it's important to preserve our history. Give us a license to be able to do this for free so that people can look through it. And he makes this stuff happen. It's amazing.
Yep. And so
and when, then your send
mom,
money.
When your mom says Kahle is good for you, that's what we're talking about.
She means Kahle is good for archive.org.
Yeah, and we're not, you know, this is no advertisement for them or anything, but
they're a nonprofit foundation, so consider it an unpaid advertisement. But yeah, they're not sponsoring the show.
I should have known, like, back when they put up that huge arcade archive of old video games that you could play in your browser, I should have known then that they were capable of anything. Because up to this point, my impression of archive.org was like, well, sort of busted web histories, and like, I kind of want to see what Yahoo looked like in 1996.
Right. And all the images aren't there.
Yeah,
so,
stuff's cached. And the further in the future you get, the worse it gets, because some of that stuff's dynamically generated and it can't record that. And I just thought, well, that's still cool, you know, audio, video, and that. And then we've got these rad, like, multi-browser compliant, super cool ways to look at this stuff. I just feel like we're entering a new phase for that stuff. So I say, Kahle is good for you.
And I think archive.org gets short shrift sometimes, partly because through no fault of their own, they weren't able to catch all the images of early servers. So the Wayback Machine does appear broken sometimes because the images aren't on the original servers anymore. But also because it's not a flashy startup, you know, and everybody loves these cool things that it does. But it's not out there with a like material flat design and a, you know, scrolling web thing with the VC people backing it and throwing parties and stuff. But it's really, really cool. And they actually do throw parties in San Francisco.
Yeah, of course.
The record label Varese Sarabande will release a double LP vinyl of the Firefly soundtrack, which will be exclusively sold at Barnes & Noble because, hey, let's make this retro. The exclusive package features an original rendering of the ship Serenity on the front and back covers. Vinyl at Barnes & Noble, combining the best of the 70s and the best of the 90s to bring us the best science fiction show of the 2000s.
Weird. So, okay, wait a minute, though. I'm trying to get my head around why. How did this happen? Like, what is the genesis of this in your mind there, Jenny?
I can tell you, as a faithful Barnes & Noble goer, that they have been dedicated to a vinyl collection that actually is really impressive in its sort of scope, if not its like large scale availability. Like if you walk into the Barnes & Noble where I live by the Grove, which is this fancy outdoor mall, every time you walk in, right in the center console, you'll see on your way up to the escalators, you'll see different vinyl records all the time. I've seen Beatles re-releases. I've seen Led Zeppelin. And then I've seen sort of weird, quirky stuff like the Better Call Saul soundtrack. I purchased a couple of them that I've just loved, including sound like the Star Wars one that had like that didn't even have a cover. It just had the record itself encased in clear vinyl, and it had just had pictures all over. It was incredible.
That's cool.
And I also at Barnes & Noble bought the sort of the briefcase vinyl. So like this is part of their thing, and they are looking for niche items like this that have large fan bases to boost that vinyl up. And look, hey, Firefly is like the definition of that.
Well, what's the other music there? So you got the "Take My Car, Fly My Ship."
No, it's all the soundtrack stuff. You know, like you love to get the soundtrack from Warcraft,
sure,
because you get all of that mood music. It's all of those pieces as well.
Okay, good. I mean, not that I don't like the title track. I do actually quite a bit.
Some people don't.
You can't take the sky from me. I like it a lot. You know what? Listen, if you're gonna hate on a science fiction theme, just go watch Enterprise again and be reminded how bad things can be. And then listen to Firefly and you go, oh, this is lovely.
It's a long road getting from there to here, Scott.
Oh my gosh. You're evoking
the
spirits.
It's been a long time, but my time is finally near.
Oh my gosh. Bloody Mary and Candyman show up if you start singing the theme to that stupid show.
Australia is holding its annual census on August 9th, and a group called the Atheist Foundation of Australia is asking people, please don't put Jedi down as your religion. 64,390 people put Jedi as their religion in the last census in 2011. And here's why the atheists care. Jedi, if you put it down, counts you as religious but not defined, because they don't have an actual category in the census for that yet. And that doesn't count you as no religion. And therefore, when they're saying, oh, well, should we allocate government money to religious works? If you put Jedi down, that counts you as a vote towards, yes, please give government money to religious works. The atheists would like you to not do that. So the atheists are campaigning against Jedi.
Mm,
so, that doesn't seem right.
So, Jenny, what if you're really buying into the whole Jedi credo? What if your thing is that you're super into all that and you're feeling the Force and everything, and nobody can tell you that you don't believe what you believe, right?
Well, yeah, but except that hokey religions and ancient magic are no mask for a good blaster. But other than that, it's fine. But what I would say, which is, I understand.
Those stories, Jenny, they're true.
Yes.
All of them.
All of them.
What?
Well, see, look, he's doing modern day quoting and you did old time quotey. And now I'm going to give you one you haven't even heard yet, which will show up in Rogue One. You ready?
Yeah.
Never mind. I'm teasing. I don't have anything.
Oh.
I rebel.
Yeah, there
trolled
you go.
Again.
I'm rebelling, and I've got stuff to shoot and people to see. There you go.
In all seriousness, like a bunch of atheists telling me what to do about what I think is just as bad as a bunch of super religious Jedi telling me what to do about what I think. So I think everybody can just go stuff it. And if you want to believe in the Jedi Creed, you can. If you want to believe you're in any other faith, and if you don't want to believe in any faith at all, but like, come on, man. If people want to express that they like the fake thing that George Lucas made up based on 1,000 other real religions, let them. It's Australia.
I don't think the atheists are saying if you really believe that Jedi is your religion, don't put it down. I really don't. I think what they're saying is if you don't believe in any religion, and you're just putting Jedi down, just kind of thumb your nose at the government. We want to point out that actually then gets counted this way.
I'm going to have a little fun with this and ask you guys a question that is related. So we know that if you're gonna speak about space religions, Jedi is right up there, right? It's way up there on the list because of how massively popular it is and everything else. But if you forget
and then
that,
as Ralph puts, don't forget the atheists.
Oh,
that's right out of the chat room.
You know,
magic.
He just had a birthday and he's hitting comedy gold every day since. It's killing me.
I know.
But do you guys have a favorite space religion outside of that? Jenny, do you have one that jumps out at you as like, oh yeah, I'd go to that church. That existed.
I thought the Church of Cylon or whatever it was on Battlestar Galactica was a little whiny and overwrought, to be honest. I think I'm trying to think of what other, like, what are some examples of other fake religions?
Let's see. Star Trek shows off a bunch of those.
Never mind.
Yeah. But, that was good, Tom. Yeah. But what, but Star Trek was actually notable for not having, like, an Earth-based religion as much anymore, especially in the later years.
Like, no, the Vulcans just had more, like, mystical practices than the humans did.
Oh, yeah. I did not like the Vulcan religion at all. I thought they were a bunch of tightwad jerks.
Well, that's undisputed, but they were...
I like Guinan.
Yeah, Guinan was all right. Yeah. What was her thing? She was like...
Just
she was,
chill, man. Yeah. That was her thing.
Shave your eyebrows and live forever, man.
Become a bartender.
Yeah, wear a purple mushroom hat. Yeah, that's cool, man. No, I'm gonna go a little weird and say my favorite space religion, and there's a few of them that are showcased really well, but on the series Futurama, there's a handful of those that are excellent, and my favorite is the Amazon planet, where all the these big strong women there worship a giant computer called the Femputer. And it's great, and it's voiced by Bea Arthur, which makes it even better. Oh.
Nice.
And it was before she died, and it's got an incredible love story with Bender, and is my favorite space religion of all space religions. So there you go.
I got to give a shout out to the Bene Gesserit.
Oh yeah,
in Dune. Yeah. I don't know that I would become a member, but very very strong space religion there.
Yeah. Also, you know, another fictional thing that's good, and that I don't know how much experience you guys have with, but the Warhammer 40K universe is filled with just awesome ultra religions, like. They just go as far as they can with the way they think about their emperor, and they treat him like a god, and they keep him alive forever. And it's filled with crazy biological, weird, kind of Dune-esque science. And it is awesome. 40K religions are amazing. Yeah.
I mean, I serve Our Lady Sylvanas.
Yep. Down in the Undercity. You'll go down there and you'll hang out by her feet and say, you know,
Dark Lady, watch over you.
Yeah, watch over me.
Now I'm down the rabbit hole on Wikipedia looking at lists of fictional religions.
That's all
Carpathianism.
Right. Oh, what's that one?
Church of the Fauns.
Whoa.
Church of the Fauns.
Just
tell me more.
Cult. That's from Family Guy.
Wait, Church of the Fauns, F-A-W-N-S or F-A-O?
No, F-O-N-Z. Like
F-O-N-Z. All right. Like Fonzie.
Festivus?
Yeah.
Maybe it's Festivus.
Festivus is pretty good.
All right.
Airing of grievances. Yeah.
Yeah, Festivus is pretty good.
Yeah.
That's a pretty. All right. Let's finish up with a committee that is organizing the United States part of an athletic event that's being held in South America, and sent a letter to companies who sponsor athletes but don't sponsor the event in question, warning them not to use the word that is the name of the event in social media, calling it a trademark violation. The letter stipulates that any company who is not media cannot even share or repost anything from the official account of the events happening in South America, or even reference the results of the events of the athletic competition that is happening in South America.
Is that why everybody says summer games on everything? Is that the legal reason?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's not the legal reason. Legally, you're allowed to say the name of something if it's real and is happening. What you're not allowed to do is associate yourself as if you are somehow connected to it. You can't call your own athletic competition the same name. That's trademark infringement. You can't imply that, in fact, I am authorized as a sponsor of that game. You can't do that. But you can say it, and hell yeah, you can retweet anything on Twitter. That's the whole point of Twitter.
Mm. So I'm going to call Molly Wood in right now. No, I'm just kidding. Like, I feel like this is just like waiting for a very long Molly rant. So I will not.
It's been done.
Yeah, I know. Just reference Buzz Out Loud episode whatever the
right,
whatever.
2008, 2010. Yeah.
That being said, the Olympics as an organization right
now. Oh, I'm sorry. You're not allowed to say that word, Jenny.
I submit that we are media. Oh, wait. Here come the shock troops.
Yeah.
Look, I respect having now worked at this organization for a grand total of 4 months. I respect branding and marketing as legitimate things that companies that have that kind of budget can pay attention to,
mm-hmm.
right? That makes sense. But when you're trying to defeat the method of actually taking the marketing and spreading it around the thing called the internet, I think you've gone a step too far. Mm. I'm just saying, I'm just thinking out loud here.
Yeah.
It's one thing to say, hey, We know Coke. Well, Coke's a bad example. We know Mattress Company, that you sponsor your local high jumper and you want to talk about how she's participating, but you can't imply that you're an official sponsor of the Olympics. So don't do anything that says, you know, the official sponsor of Olympian high jumper, because that might, you know, lead to a misconception. Totally get that. But saying you can't use the word. You can't say like, hey, we're sponsoring Heidi High Jumper and she's down at the Olympics competing. That is legal. You get to say that. There is no law that says you can't say she is at the name of an event. Like, and that's just wrong.
And we can say the word Olympics on a podcast, right? I mean, I'm not
Olympics.
Yes. No, right. I am not. I have been avoiding saying it. And I did this on DTNS. Because it's like, hey, man, you don't want people to talk about your stupid thing, then we won't talk about your stupid thing. Is that what you want?
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Also, maybe spend a little less time on worrying about this and a little more time supporting the countries that could use your benefit and expertise to, you know, successfully host the Olympics. Yeah. I'm just thinking out loud.
Yeah, don't drink the water. Always wear a DEET suit. And what else you want to do down there in Rio? You got to
just get real used to poop.
Yeah. High dives.
I mean, it was crazy when they were in Athens. That's a new event, actually. The 100-meter sewage swim.
Oh, God. No, it was crazy. That's funny.
In Athens, where Mount Olympus is near, when they had the events, they were going around telling cafes that they couldn't call themselves the Olympics Cafe. And they're like, we've been called this since before, you know, Juan Antonio Samarac was around, before the invention in the 1800s, you know, the reintroduction of the games. Like, come on.
There was, before there were five rings, there was Athens, Greece, where we were the Olympics. Like, that was just the way it was. It's just a very tight thing for something that's supposed to be this broad bringing together a friendly competition between nations that are sometimes at war, but in this case, they just got to dive real good against each other, or, you know, play good ping pong against each other. Like, there's something about that is that reaffirms humanity, makes everybody feel better about each other. And yet we got to get all hung up on who can say it. And it's really aggravating to me. So Olympics, 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 come after me. Come at me, bro. Actually, don't come at me. I think that'd be kind of a problem. By the way, one final thing I'd say to that. If you want to make the Olympics better in Rio, here's what you do. High jumping competition. They do them off of Jesus' hands. They're the big statue on the thing. Just phew, two at a time, right off the big Jesus' hands.
It'd be like a base jumping.
Yeah, I guess it's a little more like that. Yeah. All right, that's our stories. Everybody, thank you for submitting them. Tom, who participated today?
Big thanks to Captain Kipper and Parker 546, Strike It Rich 1, and Free Rangers. They were all people who submitted stories we used today. Please keep submitting those stories, even if we don't use them. They're fun to read, and everybody can vote on them at currentgeek.reddit.com.
Jenny, tell us about the Marketplace Tell It Anyway superhero sound quiz.
There's no tell it anyway in the sound quiz, except for my heart, blood, and soul. Okay, so when I first got here to Marketplace, I wanted to build a product here that was, for lack of a better word, a sound quiz, where you played a sound and you had to guess based on the question what it was, and that product didn't exist here. And so we have these great developers that I got on their wait list, and they created it, and basically it looks awesome. And it was a really exciting experience to help them develop like the editorial and the content side of this quiz, because what I learned was, as you guys know from quizzing people all the time, the way you ask the question really and the order in which you ask these questions can really influence how people think the answer is. So and that was a challenge to me. And then, of course, having to pull the sounds and figuring out, you know, what's the right sound and mixing it right and doing all this stuff. So there's a huge amount of work that went into it, like right up until this point, because also, as anybody who watches any of these shows know, there's a lot of browsers out there and they all have to work with your thing. And it really gave me a huge appreciation for the people who build stuff like this. So if you want to go check it out, and may I say, I'm not going to say my job depends on it, guys. I'm going to say that, like, it would help a lot if every single person who like watches Current Geek and listens to Scott and watches a Daily Tech News show goes and checks out this quiz at marketplace.org, or you could go to the link that I bet will definitely be in the show notes of this show.
Sure.
Because a lot, like, hard work goes into every product that ends up on the web, from your guys' shows to these apps to whatever. But this is the first time I really got to experience it firsthand for a web-based product. And like, even now, the guy, the developer, is still working on it. So please go check it out. I know Tom played it, Scott played it, worked for them. It's kind of fun.
It's a really fun quiz. And the best part about it was that I was all rushed and answered the first question without listening closely to the audio and got the first question wrong. Then realized quickly, oh crap, I really need to pay attention. And the audio, you did a great job of balancing it so that the questions are valid, but you need that listen to that audio to be sure, like, okay, that's the answer I'm going for. It's really good.
Which badge did you get, Tom, at the end of it?
What badge did I get? I got 9 out of 10.
You would have gotten near perfect then, right? Would have been.
Yeah, you got the guy with the yellow mask
and the goggles, so, and he was thrilled.
There's one more thing that I should mention about this sound quiz, which is if you go to it, you'll see that the landing page art and also the badges that you get on the end might look really familiar in a My Extra Life kind of way. Mm. And that's because Scott Johnson, who you may know from being right in the other little box on this Current Geek here, did the art for this sound quiz. And to me, the ability to make that happen, to make like cool art that goes along with this quiz, is what drove me through this process. And I'm so happy for you guys to all get a chance to go check it out.
And it was so much fun to help make. So please check it out. features.marketplace.org/quiz/superhero. It's simple. Write it down. There you go. Keep it in your head. It was really cool. And it was really fun to work on.
Listen, when Jenny got the job at Marketplace, Roger Chang stepped in. He's got a baby to feed. And I'm not saying his baby's going to starve if you don't take this quiz, but do you want to take that chance?
Hey, no, I don't.
Feed Ellie. Take the quiz.
I took the quiz and got a perfect score, I'm happy to report. Yep. I think I may have gotten lucky on one or two. I'm just saying. You might too, people. So go try it out. features.marketplace.org/quiz/superhero. All right, we're going to take a very quick break. We'll be right back. All right, you guys, somebody listening to me right now is a small business owner. I'm looking right at you, right through the internet, right through the radio, right through your earbuds, straight at you, because you're looking around for web hosting and you're having a hard time. You don't know where to look. You don't know where to go. You don't know how to save money. You don't know the best thing for you. I do, though. That's hostpapa.com. Go to hostpapa.com and get a complete turnkey solution, making it easy for any small business like you to get the website you need up and running. Literally everything your business needs. It includes fast servers, lightning fast, you might say, professional email, automated website backups, hundreds of cloud-based productivity tools, cutting-edge security. That's not all. Their support is 24/7, 365 via chat, phone, or email. You get to choose. Easy-to-use drag-and-drop features, single-button WordPress installer, very security. If you need extra help, they'll give you a dedicated 30-minute one-on-one training session for free. Nobody else does that. Starting as low as $3.95 a month, HostPapa is right for you. Go try it out. It's risk-free. 30-day money back. Here's all you have to do. Go to the website, hostpapa.com/currentgeek, and use the code CURRENTGEEK. It's going to save you 15% off powerful and secure web hosting for small business owners. That's hostpapa.com/currentgeek. And the code, Current Geek. Today's episode is also brought to you by Kaspersky Labs. Kaspersky Labs. Kaspersky Lab protects people from the real threat of cybercrime. Kaspersky Lab internet security software has participated in more independent tests, won more awards, and placed first more times than any other internet security company. 400 million users around the globe trust Kaspersky Lab to protect their banking, browsing, shopping, and socializing from dangerous online threats. Gives you online protection when you're using your PC, phone, or tablet, and protect your banking, browsing, shopping, and all your social accounts. Go to Kaspersky.com and use Current Geek at checkout for 50% off Kaspersky's total security. That's Kaspersky.com/currentgeek. That's Kaspersky. That's Kaspersky. That's Kaspersky.com, and use Current Geek at checkout for 50% off total security. Do it today. Jenny, you want to play a little game with us?
Yes, I would like to take your quiz.
Oh. America scores and wins.
How's it go, Tom? Put your beam. What was it? Something beam. Give me your thing again, the old time radio.
Refocus your locator beam, Scott. Return to the ship.
It's my new favorite thing, Sam says.
Mr. Dort.
Mr. Dort. I wish it wasn't so inside baseball. People just don't know what we're talking about, but it's good. It is the pop quiz. It's where we challenge our guest or guests in the areas of their expertise. We ask them questions. They answer them. They do the best they can. When they hear or when we hear a good answer, we hear a wrong answer. Tom keeps score the entire time. Jenny is no stranger to this. Certainly not your first time to the rodeo.
No, but this is my first time with a 95% fried brain. So we'll see.
So when you're now that this is sort of done for you anyway, other than you know, there's some tweaks and things happening. Is there another giant thing on the list? Or are you going to be able to breathe a little bit in the next few days? Or what's your?
Well, there might be, and I might not be able to talk about it yet.
Oh,
snap.
Dropping bombs. Okay, well.
She just Josephsoned you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nobody likes that. I know what love is, Jenny. All right, I'm going to give you a I'm going to give you a quiz here about Star Wars Episode 1. Episode one, the first prequel, the movie that nobody likes, but
the one that started it all.
All right, we'll see.
Two-headed race man and other dumb
That's
stuff.
That's gotta hurt.
Oh, I freaking hate that.
I'm a walking anachronism.
I hated it. Here's your
there
question.
There was no father.
first
complicated exposition.
And I don't know that you're going to fail this, but if you don't like the movie, this may be challenging. I don't know.
Oh boy, I'm ready.
All right, first question. I'll give you a badge when you're done. Tell you how well you did.
All right.
What kind of gas does the Trade Federation use to try and poison Obi-Wan Kenobi and Qui-Gon Jinn? I didn't know this either. I'm looking at the word going, what?
If I were to just guess based on the gestalt of the rest of the movie, I would have said poisonium.
Yeah, or midichloria. I would go with midichlorine. I would go with Schnarfle Dizzer Mall juice.
It's pretty close, but sadly, I'm gonna have to push this. It's dioxic gas.
I think we should call it made
from Snarple Middle Bar Juice.
Yeah.
And that obviously, was a, that was so a, therefore, get a magic score. You get 50 points.
Jenny, that was a decent George Lucas. It's not bad.
George Bush Lucas.
George
I've
Bush Lucas.
I've thought a lot about this. And,
it's like dioxin.
It's really not bad.
Dioxic.
Like, I'm not kidding. That's really actually a kind of on point.
I learned it from watching you, Scott.
Next question. What is the name of the pod racing event that Anakin is racing in to win his freedom? This has a name. And I'll give you a hint. It's four words worth of a name.
It's a wizard name.
Is it Henry Thoreau Wordsworth? I don't know. the sixth annual or anachronistic overlong sort of fake looking only good thing in the movie podcast race.
Close. It's the It's the Bunta Eve Classic.
Somewhere, Ice Worm is just out there laughing.
Oh, it has to be.
You lose 45 points for not knowing that one.
Yeah,
I know.
That's a rough one.
I mean, who doesn't love Bunta Eve?
Yeah, Bunta Eve.
Who does not?
Is Bunta Eve better than Bunta Day, or do you prefer?
I just
Eve?
Remember staying up on Bunta Eve, all excited. Yeah. Parents made me go to bed.
Did they give you pajamas the night before?
But the pod racing is tomorrow.
I think what we should do is make sure that there's a guy that people who watch sports can relate to.
You may as well be in a turtleneck and have crazy hair and stuff. All right, next question. What is the name of Queen Amidala's handmaiden that was also her decoy/body double? And we're not We're not looking for the actress, but you can say it if you know
I
it.
I don't care.
That may help you. It may help your cause to do that.
So it wouldn't be Padme Amidala. It would be like Orome or something. That's someone actually from Lord of the Rings. That's a god.
We are quite sad with your answer. Also very happy.
Very happy also.
We wouldn't know the difference. Damn, I don't know.
Programmed to love. You're wrong. Hold on. But the answer is Sabe.
And you hadn't ended in an A.
So who played? So maybe you'll get some bonus points with Tom. Who played her? Because this she's famous.
Yeah, she's Keisha Castle Hughes from Whale Rider and Game of Thrones. She played a sand snake. No, just all wrong.
No, none of that was right. It was all wrong. In fact, you've made me forget her real name. She was in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. What's her name? Skinny English girl.
Keira Knightley.
But there was another one. No, I'm right, but later.
Oh, you're right, but later?
I'm right, but later. Keisha Castle Hughes was definitely in one of those prequel movies, but you're right. Keira Knightley was one, and I will, somebody could please internet that. I would appreciate it.
I was right, but later is my favorite time-space conundrum. That's pretty good.
Guys,
by
I'm
Philip K. Dick.
I'm going for a full zero. This might be a record-breaking quiz here.
Well, the movie went for a full zero, so don't
get it. Keira Knightley was Sabe. Sad but true.
There you go.
It's fine.
She was barely in it, but she wasn't anybody yet. She went on to do that soccer movie after that, and everything went good after that. Kick it like, what was it? Beat it like Beckham or something? What was
it? It like Sabe.
End it like Sabe.
All right.
It sounds like some kind of sushi. Here's the next question. What is the name of Queen Amidala's personal pilot who flew with them to Tatooine?
I know what he looks like. He's Maori.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Jar Binks.
No, his name was Captain...
He was supposed to be
You're halfway there.
I can visualize him.
He was supposed to be Han Solo.
Can you just take a scan of my brain?
Yes, but not today.
You've got a half point so far. Keep going.
Yeah. He was the Han Solo of this movie, supposedly.
Captain Tatu.
Oh, my Lord. Let's find out if that's right. Nope. It's Captain Rick Olie.
Oh, that's a lie.
It says R-I-C space O-L-I-E. So Ole, Oli, Oli.
Not Captain Panaka?
It says Rick Olie.
Uncertainty.
Rick.
Lack of clarity.
Yeah, no, you get a 100-point uncertainty bonus.
Rick Olie sounds like... What, it's like a throat lozenge or another form of being Rickrolled. I don't know what's happening here.
But I know that the actor was Maori. I'm pretty sure.
All right. He
was named Captain.
He had a terrible outfit, but he seemed fine otherwise. Yeah. All right. Final question. You ready for this one? It's a big one.
Oh, boy.
What is the name? Is this real? Okay. It must be. What is the name of Anakin's mother?
Oh, Shmi.
Is that real?
Yeah.
You got that one right. Well done. I didn't know that was her name.
S-H-M-I.
Shmi.
Shmi Skywalker.
How do you name somebody Shmi?
I think what you do is you just go into the dictionary and you start pointing at letters.
Shmoo Qui-Gon. Shmoo Anakin.
I don't think Shmi Skywalker. I mean, you say that jokingly, but sometimes I wonder. His naming conventions are so weird. Anyway, Shmi. Shmi, will you marry me, Shmi? That's terrible.
Shmi. Yeah. Well, no, nobody married Shmi because it was a you-know-what birth.
Oh, right. In space, you can call it something. It's not so bad, right? In space, out of wedlock.
In space, no one can hear you scream at the weakness of your screenplay.
Yeah. That-
You know, I've always felt like, sure, there was no father, Shmi.
Sure, Shmi.
Sure, Shmi. Whatever you say, Shmi.
All good.
Sure, your name's really Shmi.
Don't put your morale Shmi on me.
Ah, see? Shmi. Isn't there another famous really Shmi? Tired. Who am I thinking of? Shmi. Oh, the Captain Hook's little buddy.
No, you're also thinking of Shmeagle.
Oh, Shmeagle and Smee is who I'm thinking of. Smee?
Yeah.
Wait, was that from He-Man? That's
Orko. No.
You guys, that was my lowest score ever. I don't know whether to cry or be proud.
Who is the
You finished with 106.5,
Jenny. Oh, my gosh. Jenny, all that's right. Higher than anyone's ever done. You're the all-time winner. We only heard this sound once, and yet somehow you broke all records.
Yeah.
Well done, everybody. That's our game. Always fun. Let's dive right into this right here.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
All right. It's time for Forecast. It's where we try to predict the future. Often our guests provide these questions. And this was presented to us by Melanie, who we have not been able to add to the call. We are going to have her back, people, okay? I promise.
Look, she's there. She wants to be on the show. We're here. We want her on the show.
Yeah.
Some technology is not matching up, Skype, and we're going to get to the bottom
Skype
of it.
Skype will not let me add her. It wouldn't let me chat. I can't see her chatting. I don't know what happened. Probably a version thing. I blame Skype. Thanks, Microsoft, once again. However, in lieu of her being here, we did not want to have this go to waste because it's really good. So, Jenny, I'm going to let you read it. And then we can discuss it. So what is the prediction you have?
All right.
For
so
her?
the prediction that Melanie Wise had, and it is super appropriate coming from her, is that that her prediction is that women will rule the world in the 21st century, colon, are we aiming for a matriarchy, question mark?
Ooh, women will rule the world. Does it just mean they'll
now
have
the... here's why we need to have her back, because I wanted to find out, like, is this going to be some kind of matriarchy, like flipping things on its head? Or is she saying, like, no, it just, instead of having a bunch of guys as presidents, we're going to have a bunch of women as presidents.
I like the sound of your second one in terms of it being a possibility.
Because we've got Angela Merkel.
Yeah.
And we have Theresa May, and we may have a woman president here in the United States.
Yeah, or you could get Hillary Clinton. Ah, get it? That's pretty funny. I was making fun of Trump there with my old joke.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But my point is that seems realistic, and there's a path to that. The other idea where there's like a flip, you know, sort of Planet of the Apes style, or maybe a better comparison would be like Diana Prince, and you know, the way that the Wonder Woman society was sort of flipped in that way. Well, I guess they didn't have men at all though, right? Wasn't that the deal? It was all women.
All right. Well, now the two guys have talked us over.
White guy time over. Cool. Yeah. What do you think? Right. Well, you're the only woman here. You got to represent.
All right. So here are my thoughts about the matter. We did a really interesting interview on Marketplace with a woman named Rebecca Traister, who, if she was on, would say that would have much more smarter thoughts about this, and including Melanie Wise. But I'm going to give it my all.
Okay.
I think that we like. You've got a good example going right now with the race for the presidency, in which you've had 240 odd years of all male leadership at the top. And so the reason why there might be a 21st century rise in women leaders, not just at the top, but in Congress at the local level, is because we have no idea what that actually looks like. We don't have a political system here in the United States where there is an equivalent number of women in positions of power, both in corporate and in government, than that matches the population. And I think that as we get a little closer to that, you might not need an all matriarchy. You just might need maybe an even balance, right? Mm. And then the other option, that was the responsible answer. And the other option is that I'm all kinds of ready for a Why the Last Man universe, in which, you know, there's only one guy and the rest of us are roaming around with, you know, maybe an Amazonian outlook on life and spontaneously regenerating or doing whatever. I don't know. But I think that there's no one actually that can take this issue down the way better than the people who collaborated on this incredible comic book, Why the Last Man. And I'm blanking on the guy's name, the woman who illustrated it.
Oh, shoot.
Brian K. Vaughan.
Brian K. Vaughan. Yeah, he's the writer.
Yeah. It is spectacularly good. And if you really want to see what that would look like from this perspective of there's like one guy left on Earth and all the men like spontaneously drop dead, which I would not want to happen. But let me be on the record there. But I think that what we're to take it to a serious note for a second is like what the 21st century could be. It would be really nice if it was what that dream of the 23rd century was, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a world where we're not freaking out about this stuff anymore. And we're just kind of letting people's natural skills be honed, and that there's no more division across gender and race and orientation of any kind. And we just like flip in, relax, and let good people do good work and allow other people a chance to figure out who they want to be without any, you know, any impairment. And if I don't think it has to be a matriarchy, I think it could be like a just relaxiarchy.
No, I like the just relaxiarchy. I think I have a place in that, right? In that government. So, okay. I want to spin this and throw you a question that, yep, I think you can probably answer pretty well. All right. Let's say we get there. Aren't we guaranteed, though, the closer we get to it, old notions of what people think and old prejudices toward change like this will have their crescendo first? It's like they have to take the stage before something else can happen. Like
you're seeing it.
Like violent protests in the 60s, like the Civil War, like, you know, you can name a bunch of things in time where you almost kind of had to have this cresting of awful. It even happens in science fiction. In Star Trek, First Contact was all about how things were really going to crap. before they went good and before people kind of unified. So that's the part
also
that worries me.
Also, the end
me.
Of Enterprise was like that, too.
That's exactly right. So my worry is that we're not to that crescendo yet. And in fact, we're seeing some of it now kind of leak out like ugly gas. And we're all surprised by it, but it's just there and it has to be dealt with, right? So
yeah. So we interviewed another guy. This is really interesting. It hasn't aired yet. I'm giving you an exclusive. We interviewed a guy named Michael Kimmel, and he wrote a book in 2013 called Angry White Men. And he's a sociologist. And he actually went and interviewed more than 300 men of all different economic circumstances about why they're so angry. And as it turns out, like, and this ranged from like members of the Tea Party to like successful executives to like KKK members and white nationalists and all this stuff.
Not that you're conflating those people together. I just want to make that clear.
No, I'm not. Like, he went across the spectrum of men and came away with the fact that, look, we're looking at a really dramatic shift in the economic status of a white working class man in just a very short period of time. Okay. Yeah. Like, we're talking about factory jobs. We're talking about white collar jobs that have all been taken away without providing anything else in return or even like a conscious effort to help these populations regroup. And you know what? Mm. When you can't provide for your family the way that you were told you would always be able to if you work hard, it makes you really angry. Mm. And I'm not saying this is the only group of people to ever feel this way, and it's not, but like, it's the first time that this group of people as a mass, as a like a minority of people have had to experience it. And so there is a whiplash. And anyway, the interview will do it much, much better than I am. And you could go look at the book Angry White Men by Michael Kimmel. But yes, the answer is we are at that period when they build a colony on the moon and like launch terrorist attacks from it. Like, we're at a crossroad where one way we could go one way and the other way we could all just relax.
Yeah, relaxocracy, Tom.
Relaxocracy.
Do you have anything to add to this already?
A chillocracy.
Yeah.
That's perfect. That's perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, I
don't know. It's a much longer conversation than we have time for me to proceed from there.
Yeah.
But I think going farther down the road, the idea of a question of two genders is going to seem quaint and outdated.
Ah, I love that answer. Mm. And I think that's something we're also starting to see.
Sure.
Just the beginnings of right now.
I think that I'm more in touch with my... never mind. I was going to say something I'm not going to say.
It was going to come out a real classy note.
It was going to come out good.
I guess if I could try to squeeze one really complex point into a short space, there's always a backlash against the fall of the dominant paradigm, right?
Yeah.
So Romans were once the most noble people in the world, and Italians don't have the same reputation as Romans do. In fact, Rome doesn't even have that. English were once like backwater peasants that were irrelevant to the continent and then became the rulers of the world and are now transitioning away from being the rulers of the world. So I don't think that the dominance of a particular gender is even going to escape that on the grandest scale.
Yeah. Yep. Our Americans with our manifest destiny are the least listening to that point of view, unfortunately. And I feel like it's going to be hard. It's just going to be hard. I am bullish about the future. My kids have a great future ahead of them. I am optimistic. The history is a rising road. I say this all the time. Thank you, FDR, for that quote. I use it all the time. But, you know, there's bumps is all I'm saying. Potholes.
May the road rise to meet you.
Yes.
Is what my forefathers always said.
Woody? Old man Merritt? Old Jebediah Merritt would say.
Oh. Nice. Mine just said judge people according to their kindness to you and their ability to do their jobs and whether they stop to help you if you fall down in the middle of the street and maybe not much else. Like, mm-hmm. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah. That seems pretty reasonable to me, actually. Boy, are you sure our dads weren't the same dads or?
My dad was definitely not your dad.
All right.
Do you have a 76-year-old Jewish Upper West Side, rolling former radio star as a dad? Because if you do, then we have the same dad. But if not, not so much.
No, my dad made video games and had arcades.
That's pretty cool.
It was pretty cool. It was a pretty great way to break grow up.
And Tom's dad invented food.
He invented Sago.
Seago.
Seago.
Seago is great for my ego. Was the slogan that they sold it under.
But I'm also, it's also a personal truth for you now, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Not sure about that.
All right. Before we go, email time. We got one here from somebody who sent an email in. His name is Nick, and he says this: "Hey, Scott, Tom, and guest or guests. Today it's guest, and we're so glad you're here, Jenny. My argument for avoiding spoilers is pretty simple. You can only see an unspoiled movie once. A recent example for me was I was able to avoid spoilers for the first season of Mr. Robot. So when they had that revelation near the end of the season, hey man, spoiler.
Spoiler!
I was able to experience the surprise and jolt. There's a jolt, you're telling me? I still haven't seen the show. I need to watch it. I'm starting it this weekend. I later chose to rewatch the first season before its current the current season started, and was able to pick up on all of the hints and tight storytelling that was consistent with the revelation at the end. I feel that avoiding spoilers for a first watch allows you to get a more whole experience, regardless of which experience was better or more enjoyable. Thanks for the great show, Nick." That's a fair point. I mean, I don't know. There's all sorts of science that suggests that we don't hate spoilers like we think we do, and that we enjoy things more.
Well,
but try to tell somebody that.
I like the line that Nick says here, which is, even if it's not a better experience, it's a more whole experience. And I think that's a fair defense.
Yeah, I think so too. Jenny, anything to add to Nick's thoughts there?
Darth Vader is Luke's father.
Oh my gosh. A little
next
warning.
You're going to tell me Soylent Green is made of people?
It's
totally
people.
Made of people. Hey, by the way, we had an argument on TMS the other day about why Soylent would, the Soylent company now that exists and makes that drink, why they would use the name Soylent. Do you guys have any insight on that? Because even if
it's made of people, what do you think?
It's made of people. I mean, like, isn't that what everybody says about all their companies? Our companies are made of people.
Everything's made of people.
I mean, I think it's trying to go off the deeper part of the movie where they have a food that you can eat. There's Soylent Red. There's different Soylents, and they're complete nutritional satisfaction. And so they're going off that part of the movie. But it is funny because most people only know the part about it being made.
Yeah. So when you see their creepy ad videos for Soylent 2.0, it just gives you the willies because you have this other thing in the back of your head. It's like saying, my new startup tech company is called Skynet. Nothing wrong
with that. I'll tell you what, the willies ain't all it gives you.
Yeah.
It's also because it's made of people.
People are good fiber, is that what you're saying?
Something about you, Scott, just brings out the poop jokes.
That's right. Jenny's. You were ready, though. You were prepared.
I was ready.
That is going to do it for today's show. What a fun hour this has been. Jenny Josephson, always a pleasure. Where can people find more of you online?
Well, all I'm going to say is please go to marketplace.org, take that superhero quiz, take it again, share it on your Facebook page. Because this one was hard to build, but if we do well with it, we get to build more cool things. So we have to prove that there is an army of geeks and nerds out there that would like to take and retake and share a superhero quiz. And I'm going to spend this weekend, the weekend of Matt Flanagan's actual birthday, finishing my latest Tell It Anyway that's been on the shelf for a month while I built this quiz and had a couple other things happen. And to people who really like that show, all I can do is say, sometimes you're telling stories and sometimes the stories are happening to you in a way that you can't even control, and you have to get through the second part to go back to the first. So
whoa,
I'm sorry,
wow.
And there will be podcasts.
And for the record, in case anyone's not in the know, Matt Flanagan, this person she's referring to, is the person she's married to. So there you go. She calls her husband Matt Flanagan, which is one of my favorite things about Jenny.
Well, you know, there's so many out there. You got to differentiate.
Yeah, like, hey, where's Kim Soans? Is she coming home soon? Anyway, Jenny, was a pleasure to have you. Thank you for being on.
Thank you.
Tom, anything going on with you, sir?
You know, I'm going to cede my promotional time today and just say to Melanie that we're so sorry the technology didn't work out, and we will definitely get her back on. And if you're wondering why you might be interested, go check out womenkickass.com and artemisfilm.com and take a look at her fine works. Get you prepped for when we get her back on the show.
We're having her back. We never what's the old phrase? We never leave a guest behind is how it goes. So in war or peace. Melanie, you're coming back on the show, and we'll get that stuff worked out in the meantime. So no worries. Big thanks to Andrew Allen. He does our theme music. You guys are familiar with it. You're going to hear a little bit of it here in a second. Big thanks to him for doing that for us. We do this show live on alphageekradio.com every weekend. So it's playing right now over that fine service. Support that place. Go to alphageekradio.com for more. That's where you get the free audio stream. Big thanks to DiamondClub.tv for the video stream. 801-471-0462 is our voicemail line. CurrentGeek.reddit.com is our Reddit. CurrentGeek.com for everything else. For me, for Tom, for Jenny, and our future guest, Melanie. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we return to the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act we took a deep dive into a couple weeks ago to look at a highly interesting recent application of the anti-hacking law in the context of professional baseball. Last week, the CFAA hit the news again because Chris Correa, a former scouting director of the St. Louis Cardinals, was convicted of hacking a competitor team's player personnel database. This led to a prison sentence of almost 4 years and over $275,000 of restitution. This was no case of password sharing, however. Correa, in 2013 and 14, gained unauthorized access to the Houston Astros databases by using a password similar to one used by a former Cardinals employee, who had to turn over a company laptop and his password when he left to go work for the Astros in 2011. The current general manager, Jeff Lunau, is the only employee that would have had such access and also fits this profile. From those facts, we can basically conclude that Lunau used a similar or variant form of the same password for his Astros database access, and this was predictable enough for Correa to guess it based on the information turned over to him. There's an important lesson to all people who change jobs, particularly to leave for competitors. Although hacking is a federal crime, reusing the same or similar passwords is absolutely, positively a terrible idea. It's just not worth the risk. This case also implicates the discussion of broad versus narrow interpretation of the catch-all provision of the CFAA. Certainly protecting Major League Baseball team databases is within a broad view of this catch-all, but this is also clearly hacking to cause serious financial detriment. That activity falls directly in the scope of what the law is supposed to stop, regardless of what type of computer it's applied to. The bottom line is, there will continue to be concerns about how broad the CFAA will be applied, based on big cases like this baseball one, especially when there are other mechanisms available, like Major League Baseball rules in this case, to govern such bad behavior. Let's hope for well-reasoned applications of this law in the future. Oh, and change your darn passwords already. Thanks for listening. If you will be at Gen Con in Indianapolis in August, come check out my seminars on IP law and game design, or message me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy, and we can meet up for a drink or a game.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.